Good morning, friends, and welcome to the 10th edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm John Sloop, along with my co-hosts, Rita Dunaway and Dean Welty. Now, today, we want to have a conversation about the persecution of Christians, but not in countries like Iran, Saudi Arabia, or China, but persecution of Christians right here in the United States. Now, the primary source for our discussion is a book put out by Liberty Institute in 2014 entitled Undeniable, The Survey of Hostility to Religion in America. That's 363 pages documenting in detail the alarming assaults on Christians in multiple areas, the public square, the schoolhouse, churches and ministries, business, and the military. The Liberty Survey reports that there has been a 25% increase of the attacks on religious freedom just within the last 2 years. Now, if our listeners want to get a copy of this survey, you can go to religioushostility.org to order your own copy. Now, as alarming as this is, we should not be surprised. Jesus warned his disciples that persecution would inevitably come to those who would follow him. In fact, in the Sermon on the Mount, recorded in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 5, Jesus said these words, "Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And he goes on, "Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." So there's a sense in which we might even say that if the church and Christians are not being persecuted, maybe we're not fulfilling our call to spread the gospel and work for the cause of righteousness. But I find it even more interesting that the words Jesus spoke right after this warning is his call to disciples to be salt and light. Listen to these words. Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden." And later he says, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." In other words, Jesus is connecting being salt and light and being persecuted, and that should not take us by surprise. So this is a very important and timely conversation for today. And Rita, I want to turn to you first to share with us what's going on in terms of persecution in public schools and in the public square. But before we get to that, you have taught us about the Convention of States movement. And I know you have an exciting announcement about something you've done on the Blaze, of all things. So tell us about that.
That's right. Thanks, Doc. Well, yeah, we did a program a few weeks ago, several weeks ago now, about Article 5 of the Constitution and how I believe that Article 5 may contain the best possibility as far as a strategy for us to use to reclaim our government in America. And this past week, I had a five-part series of articles on the whole Article 5 Convention of States topic on the Blaze. So it'd be great if people who want to learn more about that could look that up and read those articles. It's at theblaze.com. If you click on the tab that says contributors, you can just scroll down until you see my little picture and my name and read the series.
I did that yesterday.
Thanks, Doc.
I haven't finished the series, but it was very, very good.
Thanks. I hope you enjoy the rest of it. But for today, let's get back to the topic at hand. And what I'd like to do is talk about three trends that I see in the law with regard to expressions of faith in the public square. What I think is the most disturbing trend in modern religious liberty cases is this legal argument that keeps cropping up that it is the perception of the bystander that determines whether religious expression is constitutional or not. I know we talked a little bit about the town of Greece versus Galloway Supreme Court case a couple of weeks ago. The reason that decision is so significant is that the Supreme Court finally rejected that argument,
yes,
at least in the context of public prayer at meetings. In this case, the town of Greece, New York, had a completely neutral policy of allowing local clergy members to offer an invocation before town meetings. The argument that was used to advance the lawsuit over this prayer policy all the way to the Supreme Court was that because it just so happened that most of the volunteer prayer givers at meetings were Christian, a bystander at the meetings could mistakenly believe that the town was endorsing Christianity and that bystander might be offended. And Doc, in today's society, that is something that some people just cannot abide, is for anyone to be offended. So the court thankfully rejected that argument and upheld the town's invocation policy.
That's really a big decision, isn't it?
It was a huge decision.
I'm just so grateful for that.
Yes.
I can't get totally excited about it because the vote was 5-4.
That's right.
Had it been changed by one vote,
yeah,
the devastating effect it would have had on us.
That's absolutely right. And the thing that we need to be aware of is that just because the court rejected that argument dealing with, you know, a bystander and how he or she feels about what's being said, the court rejected that argument in this context, the public prayer context, we still see threads of the argument popping up in other places. So we cannot just, you know, relax and consider it a done deal. The second trend I wanted to mention is the creep of government regulation into every area of our lives and used to interfere with religious liberty. Today, the government regulates just about everything. Even regulations that seem appropriate on the surface because they don't have anything to do with faith, they can be misused to silence Christians. And I'll just give two quick examples for today. The first is zoning. Zoning regulations can be used and frequently are used to interfere with ministry. We saw this happen just a couple of years ago in Waynesboro when the town tried to use zoning regulations to interfere with area churches who had a ministry to shelter the homeless during winter months. And thankfully, as an attorney with the Rutherford Institute at that time, we were able to get them to reverse their policy on that. A second example of a case that I was involved in a few years ago as well was in Arizona, where the city tried to use zoning regulations to interfere with a house church, mm-hmm, in Arizona because of parking, you know, just different issues that fell within zoning authority that were used to try to interfere with faith. And then the second example is noise ordinances. Cities and towns can use those to silence street preachers. These ordinances regulating noise tend to be very broad, a little bit vague, and therefore they are susceptible to being used to silence speech that people find offensive. There's that word again, offensive. So the third disturbing legal trend, we talked about one and two. The third one I wanted to mention today is having to do directly with our public schools. Schools across the nation are being bullied, mm-hmm, into eliminating expressions of faith from the school. Now, what's interesting about this, and I think what most people don't know, is that both the U.S. Department of Education several years ago and the Virginia Board of Education several years ago have issued formal guidelines that summarized Supreme Court case law dealing with religion in the public schools. And what those documents correctly indicate is that while current interpretations forbid school officials from promoting religion in the public schools, students are free to express religious beliefs to the same extent as they are free to express secular opinions. There are a number of litigious organizations out there, however, I think we talked about some of them a couple weeks ago, that are not willing to accept that and are continuing to push toward total secularization of the schools. Mm-hmm. So what these organizations do is that they threaten local school boards with expensive lawsuits whenever they find religious expression going on at school. And what typically happens, unfortunately, is that the local school officials will just eliminate religious expression because they want to avoid the expensive lawsuit. And, you know, on this point, I want to bring in something local that some of the audience may have been aware of. Last year, Senator Bill Carrico from the southwestern Virginia area had a bill that sought to support school officials by clarifying that students' voluntary prayer and religious expression, including in their graduation ceremonies, does not violate the First Amendment and that it was permissible. Well, the ACLU strenuously objected to this, and I know that because I was in the General Assembly to testify in favor of this legislation. Well, the bill ended up passing in the General Assembly in spite of the ACLU's strong objection. But do you know our governor, Terry McAuliffe, actually vetoed that legislation to protect student speech? He argued that students have, and I quote, a right to be free from coercive prayer and religious messaging at both voluntary and required school events, end quote.
Unbelievable.
So our governor believes that Virginians have a right not to hear things that they don't like, and that this right trumps our First Amendment right to free speech and religious expression.
Well, Rita, that's a powerful segue into our next section, which is what organizations and what is the federal government itself doing to intervene in the military and in our private businesses. But I'd like to comment, you mentioned the government intrusion with regulations and in the public school, the way laws or some policies are being wrongly imposed on our public schools. But just getting into how the federal government intrudes, the federal government, particularly, I'm talking now about the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, imposed itself in a Christian school in Michigan because a teacher was fired for good cause, and the U.S. government filed a lawsuit against that Christian school saying that it supported the lawsuit, saying that you cannot fire this person without giving it proper cause. In other words, a teacher may be fired by a religious institution in spite of a ministerial exception that says the government should not intrude into the business management of private schools and churches. So that really leads me into a fairly comprehensive section on the government getting involved in our businesses and in our military. Just to lead, John, off of what you had said earlier about this study, over 300 pages of instances where government did intrude or where other groups did intrude on our private liberties. So this study is really designed to expose those instances, to confront those instances and the attacks on our liberty, and then to reverse. And fortunately, the courts have been very useful to us in many of these instances. In that private school case I just mentioned, the Supreme Court got involved and said, this private school does have the right to determine its hiring policies.
Dean,
so again, thanks for the Supreme Court.
That was one of the encouraging things about reading this report.
Yes.
Is that despite these lawsuits, that in most cases, the law, you know, prevailed.
Yes.
And so
that's
encouraging.
And it's a challenge to all of us to stand up when we do get intimidated
exactly.
and harassed
exactly.
and bullied.
That's right. The challenge is to us that we do not preemptively capitulate.
Yes.
Right.
And just go away and give up to avoid the trouble.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to go through a list of things now. Instances that are reported in the book where we have been challenged. Our religious faith is being attacked. Let's start, first of all, with the Obama administration itself, which is very troubling to me, the way that they have intruded themselves into our religious liberty. First of all, many of our listeners will know about Hobby Lobby, Conestoga Wagon, the Little Sisters of the Poor, Christian colleges and universities, who are being required to have insurance programs under Obamacare that would include abortion-inducing drugs. Well, thankfully, Conestoga Wood and Hobby Lobby have been supported by the Supreme Court. But again, by that very narrow margin of 5-4.
Right.
It's frightening. But that was a Health and Human Services, a federal government organization. A second one is the Department of Justice, refused, for example, to defend the Defense of Marriage Act and to support Prop 8 in California with regard to same-sex marriages. That's the Department of Justice. A third one, going back now to the Health and Human Services, where they terminated funding for Catholic programs that aided victims of human trafficking in retaliation yep. for Catholic opposition to these abortifacient mandates. So the federal government has been so involved in these areas. Now I'm going to go, secondly, to the Department of Defense, which has become very hostile to the expression of faith within the military. In 2011, Veterans Affairs put out a policy to ban Christian prayers at military funerals. That happened at the Houston National Cemetery that came to light. That policy was challenged, and fortunately it was reversed. Also in 2011, the Walter Reed Medical Center issued guidelines banning Bibles and other religious materials should not be given away during visits.
Wow.
Thirdly, military chaplains were instructed not to read a letter to service members that was issued by the Catholic Archbishop for Military Services because it had language in there that opposed Obamacare's contraceptive mandate. So it censored that letter, and it was not read to the service members.
And these were to Catholics who were coming
exactly
to be led by their Catholic chaplain.
Precisely. And then the Air Force Academy withdrew support for Operation Christmas Child because it was led by a Christian organization, Franklin Graham, Samaritan's Purse. They also removed So Help Me God from the Academy Honor Oath. Again, training materials prepared by DOD personnel referred to Christian groups like the Family Research Council and the American Family Association as extremist hate groups comparable to Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and the KKK. Again, those policies were challenged and they were withdrawn, but it's that eternal vigilance. You don't know what they're going to do next. Now, two things that have happened very recently. Actually, one of them last year, there was a master senior sergeant who was removed. He was relieved of his duties at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio because he objected to something his commander was going to do against someone who had opposed homosexuality. However, just this week, there was a 19-year Navy chaplain named Wes Moder who was removed from his duties, brought before an official military board of inquiry, and he could be forced out of the military. Why? Because he counseled another officer who sought his advice, and the chaplain presented the biblical view of homosexuality. That is happening in our military. Finally, one more point on the DOD. Christian leaders have been pressured not to speak at DOD functions. Franklin Graham was asked to withdraw from the Pentagon's National Day of Prayer because he had made some comments about Islam. Tony Perkins, the Family Research Council, was asked to speak at the National Prayer Luncheon at Andrews Air Force Base. That invitation was withdrawn because he opposed a change in the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. And Lieutenant General Boykin withdrew from speaking invitation at West Point because he, too, had made some comments about Islam.
You know, Dean, what's occurring to me as you're giving all of these examples of government intrusion into the area of religious liberty is that a couple weeks ago we talked about the idea of the wall of separation between church and state. And we talked about how, well, first of all, the Constitution doesn't say anything about the separation of church and state. But to the extent there would be or could be some kind of wall of separation in the sense that that was originally written, wouldn't you say the meaning of it would be to protect the church and religious liberty from government intrusion?
Did that just occur to you?
It
just
is
brilliant.
To me. You are bringing it home and just illustrating the point that the government, at least this administration or, you know, the modern government has just gotten it backwards
Precisely
when it comes
right.
to religious
but
freedom.
But that's the world we're in, and I really have to fault the Obama administration, Attorney General Eric Holder, and others in the administration who are enforcing these. John, I just want to make one more comment, and then I want
You're
to
on a roll, Dean.
I want to, well, this has had a ripple effect in the private sector as well. I think many people know what happened to Chick-fil-A because they issued a statement in support of natural marriage. What happened to the Mozilla CEO, Brendan Eich, because he had supported the California Prop 8 in 2008. He was forced to resign because of that support. And then we had the Benham twin brothers. They were fired from Home and Garden TV. We had Phil Robertson at Duck Dynasty, all brought under pressure because they supported natural marriage. Also, the Atlantic fire chief, Kelvin Cochran, was fired from his position by the mayor because he had made some private statements to members of his church presenting the biblical view
I think he had
of
written
sexual
a booklet
morality.
Or something.
Yes,
he had actually written
that
a
he
booklet,
made available that included those comments.
Yeah.
And then more recently, a Salt Lake City police officer was fired because he objected to leading a motorcycle element in a gay pride parade. That brings me to the final points, and that is small business members. There was a 70-year-old grandmother, Baronelle Stutzman in Washington, Arlene's Flowers, because she would not make a flower arrangement for a same-sex wedding. She has been sued and is likely to lose her business and perhaps all of her savings, for all we know. Again, by a Human Rights Commission in Washington. Sweet Cake, there's another example. Sweet Cakes in Oregon, Melissa Klein, same thing, would not prepare a wedding ceremony cake for a same-sex wedding. Photographers, print shops, innkeepers, all of whom supported natural marriage and who are being sued for taking those positions. That brings us down locally, I think, to state human rights commissions that are saying you cannot say anything negative about same-sex marriage or in support of natural marriage. It is a tide that is growing around us, and it becomes really almost depressing, John, because of the way that we are being attacked.
Yes.
Sorry, so that took a long time. John, what do you have, particularly with regard to attacks on churches and Christian ministries?
Well, again, this Liberty Institute survey dedicated 166 pages to documenting the hostility against churches and Christian ministries. Now, most of the attacks come from municipalities prohibiting churches from building or expanding. As Rita indicated earlier, they use zoning laws, I believe, unfairly against churches, putting unreasonable demands on churches that aren't expected of other organizations. Another example would be a case in New Jersey where a Christian retreat center
was threatened with the loss of their tax-exempt status if they refused to allow same-sex marriages to take place in their chapel. So here's the government telling a church, you know, what they can and can't do. It's that breaching that wall again. Another example, in Massachusetts and Illinois, Catholic charities were taken to court demanding that they go against their biblical understanding of the family and requiring them to place children for adoption into homes of homosexual partners. To me, that's unconscionable. Then there was a highly publicized case about the Boy Scouts of America were taken to court demanding that they change their standards by accepting self-avowed homosexual men as scout leaders. It just simply does not make sense. But perhaps the most chilling attack, which is not in the book because it's so recent, occurred in Houston, Texas, October of 2014, where the city council, led by America's first openly lesbian mayor, passed what came to be known as the Non-Discriminatory Bathroom Bill. And the bill basically said that transgender people could use public bathrooms regardless of gender. And so the Christian community, churches, and organizations rose up against that, preached sermons about it, editorials about it. And in response to the church's reaction, the mayor got the city council to issue subpoenas to five prominent pastors in the Houston area, requesting their sermons, any letters they'd written to the congregation, to see if they could be accused of hate speech. Well, the reaction by the Christian community was overwhelming, and I'm grateful to say that the mayor, in short order, withdrew those subpoenas. But again, it's because, as Rita was saying earlier, the body of Christ did not capitulate but stood up for their rights given in the Constitution. So there are many, many evidences of this going on. Not in places like Iran and Saudi Arabia and China, but right here in the United States of America. Dean, I know you've talked a little bit about something that happened in 1954. Rita and I weren't born then, but you were around. It's something that Lyndon Baines Johnson and his administration passed sort of under the cover of darkness that has a tremendous impact on this.
Well, just briefly, John, again, 1954, Johnson was in a tough political campaign. Many of the churches were opposed to his candidacy, and so he passed an amendment to a law that really placed limits on the activities of nonprofit groups in election campaigns. That has served as sort of a muzzle on churches. And many of them will come to us and say, well, I can't talk about politics because of this law. Well, Alliance Defending Freedom, a group that we mentioned earlier, has really come to bat for these pastors, said you have the freedom in your pulpit to preach biblically on any subject, and we will defend you if you get into trouble.
And it was the ADF that was the lead in overturning this situation in Houston.
That's exactly right. So, again, it's just an encouragement to pastors to preach boldly from the pulpit without fear.
Amen. One of the things that I'm becoming aware of is that the body of Christ needs to be organized, needs to come together. Dean and I had a meeting this week with a church that's wanting to start a cultural impact committee. And the idea is if the church is prepared and organized in advance, then they're prepared to respond to these assaults. Well, thank you, Rita and Dean, for helping us better understand the growing hostility toward religious freedom in America. And thank you, friends, for tuning in each week. This program is listener-supported, and if you want us to stay on the air, then please send your contributions to Crossroads, P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia, 22803. Now, our topic next week will be, is the Bible still true? What is our source of authority in making these defenses? Until then, this is John Sloop along with Rita Dunaway and Dean Welty, encouraging you, as always, to be salt and light, to make a difference for Christ at the crossroads where faith and culture meet.